I'm Kathy Kwan. I'm your host for Home Health 101 podcast. And today we're going to talk about Oasis E. I hope you've listened to the other podcasts about Oasis D and are familiar with the subject matter. So today we're going to talk about Oasis E, which has been deemed to be implemented on January 1, 2023 by CMS. It was delayed a couple of years due to the pandemic, but now they're ready to implement it. So they've made the changes and they've updated. The newest draft was released on May 16th, and there is a draft manual available also. So you have to go to cms.gov and search for OASIS, and you will find all sorts of documents to look through and read and even print out. You can print out the data set for OASIS E. It does have some significant changes from OASIS D. And I think it's going to simplify things and at least make it a much more clear assessment of the patient. The main thing we still need to remember is that this is an assessment. It's not a questionnaire. It's not something you hand to a family member and say, can you fill all this out for me while I assess your loved one? This is an assessment. You have to actually have the patient perform the items that you need to assess and determine whether they can or can't do and what their limitations and restrictions or disabilities are. Again, it begins with demographic information and ethnicity, race, current payment source for home health, languages spoken, which are primary languages, the date of the assessment, the date of the completion of this assessment, and who's doing it. Is this the RN, the PT, speech, or OT? And what is it being completed for? Is it a start of care, resumption of care, recert, transfer, or death or discharge? And you'll need to put in those dates. You need to put in the date that the physician ordered the start of care or resumption of care and the date of the referral. Episode timing, is it early, later, unknown? That's going to depend on how soon you were referred to the patient and whether this is a continuing episode, a new episode or a continuing episode of care. And then you need to check on transportation and check all that applies here. And it's information about that's kept me from medical appointments or non-medical meetings, the patient's unable to respond, or the patient declines to respond. Anywhere where the patient has been most recently in the last 14 days. And you would check all of them that apply, which could be a long-term care facility, a SNF, short stay acute hospital, a long-term care and acute hospital, or inpatient rehab, psychiatric hospital, or other, and you need to specify then. Or then that they were not discharged from an inpatient facility. Need to know the discharge date that they were discharged from that facility. And if you don't have that information, you need to get that as soon as possible. You also need to request records so you have some information on what's happened with that patient in the last even 14 days. Did they have emergent care? Were they in the emergency room? Why were they in the emergency room? And what was the discharge status from the emergency room? Were they admitted to the hospital or sent home? And then you need to reconcile their medications and talk about what you reconciled them with. The next section goes on to talk about hearing, speech, and vision. And it again, these are things that you need to assess for the patient and have them answer questions or actually perform is a better way to do it, the preferred way. And then there's a question here about health literacy. This isn't a new thing, and I think it's really very important. That's to understand that the patient has someone to help them to read instructions, pamphlets, or other written material, and do they understand it? Cognitive patterns is section C. Then we move on to acute onset of any mental changes in the recent last probably 14 days with this patient, any behavior issues or inattention, disorganized thinking, altered level of consciousness. The next section covers cognitive functioning, and then when confused or when anxious, their mood, any changes in mood recently, and how severe their mood changes have been and how badly they affect their care. Social isolation. And then we move on to behavior in section E, which includes cognitive and any behavioral or psychiatric symptoms that are demonstrated at least once a week. The frequency of any disruptive behavior symptoms, whether they're reported or observed by the patient or their family members or caregivers. And then we have preferences for customary routine activities. What is their current living situation? Okay, the next section goes into types and sources of assistance at start of care or resumption of care. And then there's another section following that that talks about the types and sources of assistance at discharge. Next, it moves into functional status, and it wants some specific information about what the patient is able to do. Again, this needs to be an assessment and not an assumption, or just asking the patient questions. Some of it you may be able to derive from what you see that the patient is able to do while you're making the visit. But in most of these cases, you do need to go through and perform a full assessment of what's going on with them. This would be including grooming. Are they able to groom themselves? Are they able to get dressed? Can they get their clothes out of their closet or dresser? Can they dress their upper body? Can they dress their lower body? As far as bathing goes, are they able to get in and out of the tub or shower? Do they need assistance? Are they able to do it alone, or do they need a full-blown assistance here, or are they totally unable to get in and out of the shower and have to have a bed bath? Then we talk about toileting, whether they can transfer to the toilet or not, and how much help they need there, and with toileting, hygiene, and how much assistance they need there. In transferring and ambulation, how much assistance they need, or are they able to do this on their own? And then we get into a section on functional abilities and goals, where we're going to talk about assess whether they need to be independent, need some help, but they're totally dependent, or we can't even guess at this point what they might need. They also need to know about prior device use. Have they used a manual wheelchair, a motorized wheelchair, a mechanical lift, a walker? Do they have any orthotics or prosthetics, or none of the above? Then we're going to go into a section here, continuing with the functional abilities on their self-care. How much assistance do they need with all of their ADLs? There's boxes to check off for start of care, resumption of care, or discharge. Now, your agency may produce different documents from the OASIS, or they might choose to use this particular one all by itself, and so you'll have to pay attention to what you're doing, you know, and which form you need to be filling out. Sometimes they will use a combined form just so that it's easy to see the progress and what's changed and what hasn't. And then the safety and quality of the performance of their own self-care, right? And then where they are at discharge, definitely to show that there's been some improvement or not in all of their self-care and ADLs. Again, same thing with mobility. And comparing it from start of care or resumption of care to discharge times. And then we're going to talk about the function of body systems such as the bowel and the bladder. Have they been treated for a UTI in the last 14 days? Do they have a urinary incontinence or catheter device present? Do they have any bowel incontinence and the frequency of that? Do they have an ostomy? Then it moves into section one, which is active diagnoses, and you need to come up with your primary diagnosis and codes for that and other supporting diagnoses for all of the care that you're giving. Then I'll ask some questions about your active diagnoses and comorbidities. Is there any peripheral vascular disease or diabetes? Other health conditions, so they are at risk for hospitalization. And some of the reasons that could happen is that they have a history of falls. And in the last 12 months, they have an unintentional weight loss of 10 pounds or more, multiple hospitalizations, multiple ER visits, a decline in mental, emotional, or behavioral status in the last 3 months. Do they have a reported or observed history of difficulty complying with any medical instruction, like taking their medications or following a diet or exercise program? Are they currently taking 5 or more medications? And that's probably going to be a big one for most of your patients. They are on polypharmacy in most cases. And that's an important part of our job, is going out there and assessing their medications and reconciling them and making sure that they're taking them correctly. So all of those things all play into the risk for rehospitalization, and that helps to, if your patient is rehospitalized and how it counts against or for you with that happening. Do they have any pain, and what's the effect of that pain on sleep? Is it also interfere with that, physical activities or therapy? And have they had any falls since the start of care or resumption of care, whichever is the most recent? Then you need to code the falls as to whether there was no injury, an injury, a minor injury, such as skin tears or abrasions, that sort of thing, or whether they had a major injury where they fractured a bone or hip or a closed head injury with altered level of consciousness, or did they have any form of hematoma, subdural, whatever. Okay, then we move into shortness of breath. Do they have any noticeable dyspnea or shortness of breath? And then we move into their nutritional status in section K, which they want to know the height and the weight of your patient. Now, again, if you've got records from the hospital, that information should be right there, so you don't need to worry about whether you have a scale or a tape measure to measure them. Otherwise, you're going to have to get an approximation from the patient unless they have those things available to you. Then they're going to want to know about their nutritional approaches. Do they have any IVs or tube feedings running? Do they have a mechanically altered diet, such as pureed foods, thickened liquids, etc.? Or a therapeutic diet, such as a diabetic diet, a low cholesterol, or a low salt? Or are they on none of the above? Again, it compares that from start of care to discharge. And then feeding or eating, are they able to independently feed themselves? Do they need meal setup, supervision from someone? Are they unable to feed themselves and has to be assisted with something by someone? Do they even remember to swallow and that sort of thing? Okay. Section M goes into skin conditions. They want to know about any unhealed pressure ulcers, and any stage 2 ulcers available or present, excuse me. And then the current number of unhealed pressure ulcers. Again, they'll compare that data with what's happening at discharge. gets into more specifics about what stage levels of pressure ulcers, stasis ulcers, and other surgical wounds, etc. I know those get a little confusing again because, you know, what's a surgical wound? And there's a lot of discussion available online about that to help you. And then on medications, section N, we're talking about high-risk drug classifications, the use and indication. Are they on anything for antipsychotic, anticoagulant, antibiotics, opioids, antiplatelet, hypoglycemic, including insulin, that could cause some issues and, again, possibly result in rehospitalization. When was the last drug review done, and did you find any issues or not? Has there been a contact with a physician to let him know what your medication list entails? And have you had to do any interventions for this patient or anticipate interventions? And do we have any high-risk drug education issues that you anticipate? Are they able to manage their own medications? Do they need to have them set up? Do they need to have someone take care of them and administer them to them? And then are they taking any injectable medications? And what is the status of how they can manage those? Okay. And then there's other special treatments. Are they receiving chemotherapy, oxygen, IV medications, such as antibiotics or anticoagulants or transfusions? Don't think we really do transfusions in the home right now. Dialysis, do they go for hemodialysis or are they on peritoneal dialysis at home? And what kind of IV access do they have? Is it a peripheral line, midline, or a central line? And then again, at discharge, what any of those might still be continuing on. And then information about the influenza vaccine. Has it been received recently or not? And is there a need for therapy in the home? And the projected number of therapy visits that are indicated. And then section Q talks about intervention synopsis, which is about fall prevention, depression interventions, interventions to monitor and mitigate pain or to prevent pressure ulcers and pressure ulcer treatment, and what is the goal for that. And that finishes up the document. It is a little different from the OASIS-D document. It doesn't go into a lot of details on some areas and goes into more on some. So there will be some changes. There will be a learning curve to deal with this. But all in all, I think it's a better document in a lot of ways. It doesn't go into as much detail, say, on falls and things like that as some of the other documents have in the past. But I think this gives enough of an answer as to whether or not they've had falls and history of them and what you're doing about it. So I think you'll find that this is a little bit easier to follow and a little bit easier to work through. Remember that there are three items that determine what the level of pay is going to be for this patient. There's a big formula that figures this all out for your episode of care, which includes the social level, their functional level, and their clinical diagnoses. So it's important that you get all this information as accurate as possible, and it needs to be done as of today's visit. Not what it was yesterday or what it was last week or even those 14 days ago when they may have been in the hospital. It's today's visit and what you actually observe and see the patient doing. So I hope that answers some of your questions and helps you work to anticipate the changeover to Oasis E in January of 2023. Thank you for attending today, and I look forward to hearing from comments and things. All right. Thanks. Bye.